The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
We are going to be broadcasting on Thursday, this coming Thursday, from New Ross, from beautiful New Ross, from the even more beautiful Dunbrody Visitor Centre perched on the banks of the Barrow. And we are there for the Kennedy Summer School. The Kennedy Summer School is an absolutely brilliant, brilliant event or series of events every year. And they always get great guests. This year they've got, you know, from the world of sport, they've got Uachtaráin coming, Luke Glasgale, Jarlath Burns is going to be there. From the literary world, Cullum Tobin is going to be there. You're going to have Irish and US politicians and policymakers and historians and cultural commentators, you name it. Name it. And in amongst them, many, many people excited to hear from Jim Acosta. He is the host of the Jim Acosta Show on Substack, former CNN chief correspondent. And I am delighted to say that he is with me now on The Hard Shoulder. Jim, it is a real, real pleasure. And thanks a million for taking the time to speak to us today ahead of the Kennedy Summer School. I mean, has this got a special resonance for you this year, given kind of discoveries you've made about your own Irish heritage?
Yeah, that's right. Thanks for having me on. I recently did the PBS television show, public broadcasting show in the U.S. called Finding Your Roots, and found out that I have very clear Irish roots going back, I think, to the 1500s or something like that. They went back and traced, you know, the Catholic Church is very good about keeping birth records and baptismal records, and they found that my ancestry on my mother's side goes all the way back to Sligo in Ireland, many centuries. And it was just an amazing thing to find out about. You know, I had been told growing up that I had Irish roots, but I just didn't know how far back they went. But the people at Finding Your Roots, they were very diligent about going through the baptismal certificates of my parents and great-grandparents and great-great-grandparents. They were able to find out when exactly some of my ancestors came over from Ireland. Right around the turn of the 20th century, they went through Ellis Island on my mother's side. So it's something that I'm very proud of. And I have to say, you know, I'm a little embarrassed to admit this. After all my travels as a White House correspondent, I'd never stepped foot on Irish soil. So I hope the audience who's listening right now will forgive me for that. So I'm going to be doing this for the very first time, and I could not be more excited to join the Kennedy School coming up this weekend.
Even before you learned about, you know, your mother's heritage, I guess that migrant experience, though, was part and parcel of your identity, but more the Cuban experience, was it?
Yes, that's right. My father came to the U.S. 3 weeks before the Cuban Missile Crisis. And, you know, he initially came to Miami and then up to the Washington, D.C. area, which is where he met my mother, and then they had me. And that has always been very much close to my identity. I identify as a Cuban American. You know, it's kind of hard to shake that when your last name is Acosta, should be pronounced Acosta. And, you know, it's something I'm very proud of. And I think it speaks to, you know, the American immigrant experience. One of the things that we're witnessing right now, and it's something that I covered during the first Trump administration, is the way this administration targets immigrants, not just for harassment, but just outright abuses. We've seen these ICE raids sweeping the country over the last several months, and they have absolutely terrorized the Latino and migrant community. And I take that very personally. My father, like I said, came over here in the early 60s when John Kennedy was president. He was also known for being of Irish descent. And, you know, what my dad tells the story about kindness and people opening up their homes and providing him and my grandmother with clothes when they first came over in the early 60s. And that to me is the American immigrant experience, not what we've been seeing over the last several months.
And yet the advocates of that more aggressive approach to inward migration, you know, themselves would have immigrant roots, like absolutely
exactly.
Everybody, almost everybody beyond Native Americans in your part of the world. So, I mean, how then do you reflect on that reality, that people with the exact same background or the same family experience as you would be advocating in favor of those ICE raids?
Yeah. Well, I have to say, I've been very tough on Donald Trump on this. And to me, it is downright un-American to have a president of the United States talk about immigrants, to talk about migrants in this fashion. Right now, there's the controversy surrounding Kilmar Abrego Garcia. You know, I'm sure you've been following this back in Ireland, but he has been put through the ringer by the Trump administration's DHS policy. He was initially taken to CECOT, the very harsh prison in El Salvador. He recently was brought back because there was a federal judge that says he was taken out of the country by mistake and that he needed to be brought back. Now the Trump administration wants to deport him to Uganda. For the listeners who are paying close attention to this at home, they did not misunderstand me. I did not misspeak. The Trump administration wants to deport him to Uganda, a country that he's not even from, a continent he's not even from. But that tells you what we're up against in the United States right now. Stephen Miller, who was of, you know, immigrant roots, obviously, he recently said that migrants may not be subject to due process rights, constitutional due process rights in the United States. And so what we've been seeing lately is very contrary to the American experience of welcoming immigrants to the country and giving them due process. Trump wants to completely eliminate that, and it's part of the abuses we've been seeing. And I've been very clear in calling it out. It's one of the things I can do now that I'm in independent media. You can call these things out and say what it is, and it's a racist, un-American policy.
And to what extent do you view it as an American story, or rather indicative of a broader trend? I know it's kind of closer to home for us, if not quite home. Is in the UK today, I see kind of Nigel Farage's party are having an annual conference, and he's effectively talking about calling a halt to any asylum process. He's saying all illegal migrants will be locked up and deported. And when he says illegal migrants, I guess that's people who entered the country without a visa or a permit, or you know, without citizenship. So you know, that's saying we will not process asylum applications from here on in other words. And they're not the only country.
Right. No, I mean, first of all, you have to have, you know, strong borders. You have to have immigration enforcement. If people are in a country illegally and they're committing violent crimes and so on, of course, those folks need to be taken out. But make no mistake, people like Nigel Farage, people like Steve Bannon, people like Donald Trump and Stephen Miller, what they're trying to do is seed hatred in countries across the democratic world to try to whip up anti-migrant hysteria. And if you look at the immigrant experience in the United States, migrants who come to the United States commit crimes at much lower rates than native-born Americans. And I don't mean American Indians. I mean people who have been living in this country generation to generation over the course of decades. And that kind of information is just sort of lost in the shuffle. What happens is that people on the far right, they'll point to sensational cases where perhaps a migrant has committed a crime here or there. But that is not the overall trend. And you know, if you look at the American, the other thing I try to do in this country and on my show is talk about the American immigrant experience. Things like the Statue of Liberty, that tradition in this country of welcoming people to our shores and watching them flourish.
Well, when you say, you know, they're kind of planting the seed of hatred, have you a view as to why those seeds are germinating? You know, what is it about the context? That, you know, these people have always existed. I often give the example of a guy who used to hand out leaflets when I was a kid in the town I grew up in, denying the Holocaust, and he was just a local crackpot. And yet these people kind of have national platforms in this day and age.
Yeah.
You know, so that their existence hasn't changed. The popularity of their message or its resonance with people or people's willingness to buy into it, that seems to be the thing that's changed. And I wonder if you have a view on that.
Yeah, I do think that hate is having a moment right now. There's no question about it. And there are purveyors of that kind of hatred on social media who have popular platforms. And, you know, one of the things that we have to do as people who, you know, care about democracy, care about humanity, being humane to other people, is you have to call it out. You have to speak out on it. But and if you look at what's taking place in the United States right now, the polling has shown, public opinion surveys have shown, that Americans are starting to wake up to what Donald Trump is doing in the United States. They're starting to turn against his immigration policy. And so while I do agree with the a part of your question in that it did sort of gain some popularity for a brief period of time. Here in the United States, we're seeing cases of little kids with cancer being deported, U.S. citizens being deported. They're not going after, you know, Donald Trump said during the 2024 campaign, we're going to go after the criminals and the gangbangers and so on. I have said on my show that that was one of the biggest lies, if not the biggest lie of the 2024 campaign. It's even worse than saying, you know, that the Haitian immigrants in Springfield, Ohio, were eating cats and dogs. They have not been, by and large, going after criminals and gangbangers. They have been going after mothers, abuelas. They've been racially profiling Hispanic people, pulling, I mean, here in Washington, D.C., they're pulling delivery drivers over on mopeds to check their immigration status. Delivery drivers on mopeds. They don't look like gangbangers to me. They're bringing people their food. Perhaps it's a suspicious case of buffalo wings. I don't know. But the American people are taking a look at what's been going on, the way they've been pursuing these policies, and the tide is turning against Donald Trump in this regard.
Do you think he's a threat to democracy?
I think there's no question. He's proven himself to be a threat to American democracy. He's already tried to overturn one election, the 2020 election. That is why we had January 6th. January 6th would have never happened if Donald Trump had just been a man and accepted the results of that election. He wasn't. And he spent the next 4 years up until his reelection campaign in 2024 peddling the big lie that he won that election, which is just, you go back to, you know, our conversation about crackpots. That's one of the biggest crackpot conspiracy theories of all time. He lost that election. He managed to get back into the White House because I think inflation was just bad enough in the U.S. where he was able to squeak out a victory in the popular vote in the Electoral College. But if you were to have that election today, he would get his clock cleaned. People are fed up with him. Look what he's trying to do right now with the Federal Reserve, what he's trying to do with tariffs, the way he's hurt Ireland and the Irish people with these tariffs. It's absolutely outrageous. And, you know, the American people are catching up. He would not be trying to steal congressional seats in places like Texas.
Yeah.
If his policies were going over well, if his presidency was off to a roaring start, it's not. He's flailing. He's flailing because of the Epstein files. He's flailing because his legislative agenda has been a dud. And so now he's going to try to attack American democracy again, except this time he's telling us in advance that he's doing it. He's trying to get these congressional seats through redistricting and so on.
If the threat is real, I mean, how seriously should it be taken? I remember, just to put it in context, this question, I remember David Axelrod interviewing Condoleezza Rice during the first Trump administration, Trump 1.0. And she, I wouldn't say she was dismissive of his threat to democracy, but the argument she made was, listen, you know, democracy is more than just one guy in the Oval Office. It's all the institutions of the state. It's everything. It's from the Federal Reserve. It's the judiciary. It's the police. It's the armed forces. It's the press and everything else in between. And while all of that remains robust, one guy in the Oval Office, you know, would find it very hard to tear down the House of Cards. I mean, is that still the case, or has he kind of successfully managed to undermine even some of those institutions?
He's undermined just about every institution in the United States right now. I mean, I've been saying on my show, and I'll say it to you, he's cracked the code on how to hurt the American news media. He has forced places like CBS and ABC, massive media companies in the U.S., to pay him in the neighborhood of, what, $15 or $16 million to his presidential library to settle these bogus lawsuits that he filed. You know, 60 Minutes, there, if folks who are familiar with that program over in Ireland, the famous news magazine here in America, the executive producer of that program resigned, citing corporate pressures from his parent company because Trump was holding the parent company over a barrel in order to extract these concessions. And so you have law firms, major law firms, big law firms, media companies, universities. You have the Republican Party, which has completely just given up in opposing Trump in any meaningful way when it comes to just about anything. John Bolton, the former national security advisor, his home was just raided here in the United States. And then Trump, over the weekend, was talking about conducting some kind of a raid on Chris Christie, the former New Jersey governor. He's going after his political enemies. These are the actions of a dictator. And I don't want to give people the willies over in Ireland. I'm looking forward to having a pint with them and enjoying some Guinness with them here in a few days. But people need to understand that the United States of America is under a very serious threat right now, and it's coming from the White House. And I'll be very clear about saying that when I speak to the folks at the Kennedy School. We've never had a presidency like this. Even Trump 1.0 was not as much of a threat as Trump 2.0. And as I've said to people on my show, and I'll say it here, he went out with a bang the last time around. We should expect the same this time around.
Well, listen, it is sobering stuff, but it is fascinating. And I know lots of people listening who have managed to get tickets to see you will be excited, Jim. So we're looking forward to it. And hopefully I'll bump into you in and around New Ross. We're broadcasting, as I say, on Thursday from the Dunbrody Visitor Centre there on the banks of the Barrow in New Ross for the Kennedy Summer School. And amongst those who will be in attendance over the few days is Jim Acosta, host of the Jim Acosta Show on Substack, former CNN chief correspondent.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.